I was raised as white, and I found out that my great-grandparents were black, which meant that they had a particularly challenging experience.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My name is Catherine Slaney. I am the author of this book, Family Secrets, Crossing the Color Line. This book was a sort of personal journey for me to find out a little bit about the lives of my grandparents and great-grandparents. And it was a surprise to me that their lives had been so different than I had pictured them. So a little bit of research uncovered some new information for not only our family, but many other people who had similar families like mine. For me, I had never considered the question of race, that is, people who appear to look different, as being that important. I had always been raised that everybody was equal and it shouldn't matter what other people look like. But to my surprise, I found that to a lot of people it did matter, particularly in earlier times when it was very difficult for people who looked different to be as fortunate and to just simply make a living. And for me, I was raised as white, and I found out that my great-grandparents were black, which meant that they had a particularly challenging experience in Ontario. Although we had some slavery in Ontario in the 1700s, and most people don't realize that there was some slavery in Canada, but the British and the French did have some slaves at that period of time. However, it wasn't something that was easy to maintain in Ontario, especially in Canada, because we didn't really have the type of lifestyle that needed a lot of free labor. These slaves were mainly house servants, whereas in the southern states we hear about many slaves who were working on the plantations, the cotton and tobacco plantations. We didn't have that kind of slavery here, but it was still prevalent to some extent. In the 1800s, before the Civil War, before the freedom of many slaves, slaves used to try to escape from their masters, and they would come up the Underground Railroad into Canada, and there, as soon as they landed in Canada, they would be considered free. But that was very arduous, very difficult, and they came here with nothing and had to start out from scratch, finding a place to live and being able to feed and clothe themselves, and then eventually finding a job. The Underground Railway is just sort of a symbol of, it wasn't really a railway, but it was a route, an escape route. The fugitives would run from one household to another household where people would hide them until it was safe to move on. There were many different routes, but everybody had a secret password and helped these fugitives move from one stop to the next until they got into Canada. And then there were some benevolent societies, usually parts of churches, that would help the people who made it to Canada. Most of the people ended up in the Niagara Falls, St. Catharines area was one of the terminuses where they come through from the States. Another one would have been over by Windsor. And within Ontario, those were sort of the entry areas. There were a few that came up around the Great Lakes and into Owen Sound area. But those people then migrated across Ontario. So there were a number of black settlements in the southwestern Ontario area. It was difficult for them because they really were starting, you know, with nothing. One of the most successful settlements was called the Elgin Settlement in North Buxton, and it was begun by a minister who brought his own slaves that he had accidentally inherited from his wife, and he wanted to set them free. He wasn't allowed to free them in the States, so he came to Canada and began a settlement and opened it up to other African Americans who wanted to come to Canada as well. And they were totally self-sufficient. They developed a sawmill, a potash mill. They farmed their own land, cleared the land, built their own homes, and basically created a wonderful little settlement. And they kind of made a commitment to stay there for about at least 10 years so that the settlement would get off the ground. These people would then get used to living in Canada, find other ways to make a living or places to settle, and within a 10-year period were able to sort of move on and integrate into the mainstream society. Many of them did stay in the southwestern area. In my case, my grandparents or great-grandparents came into Toronto, which had just recently been converted from the town of York to the city of Toronto. My great-grandfather was quite a businessman, and he started off with a little tobacco shop that didn't do very well. And then he went into real estate. And from there, he started buying and selling properties and made quite a bit of money. In fact, he ended up owning the land that now is the Toronto City Hall, the Eaton Center, the original Toronto General Hospital, and, you know, quite prominent, obviously valuable pieces of property today. However, it was well out of our family before we ever heard about it. But it did allow his family and his children to live quite well. And in that way, they were able to all obtain a very good education. My great-grandfather actually became a doctor, one of the first black doctors in Canada. And this was just before the Civil War. So as a young man, having graduated in medicine, he was very anxious to serve a cause and fight for his people. So he went down and served as one of 8 Union black doctors in Washington. And he ran a hospital called Freedman's Hospital. Freedman's Hospital was a hospital that had been set up for the black fugitives and black soldiers. In those days, we had what was called segregation in the state. The black fugitives and soldiers were not supposed to be using white hospitals. And so he was able to take over that. It was actually called the contraband camp. And these fugitives were actually considered contraband or something that was something that was captured in wartime period, and therefore it was considered legitimate to be able to keep it, and in this case, keep these people. So this was, in a way, giving them their freedom. They would not be turned back to their masters. There were so many of them in Washington that there was no place to house them. There was no place to put them, and although they tried to send some of them out to help out in the battles and spread them around, there were so many that they ended up not always able to find enough food or shelter, and many became sick.
We just haven't heard your great-grandfather's name yet.
Oh, and his name. His name was Anderson Ruffin Abbott. I don't know where the name came from. His father's name was Wilson Ruffin Abbott. And we often speculate on how he got such a stately name. Wilson had a white father and a black mother, both of whom were free. And so it's likely that he took his name from his father, who apparently was from Scotland. Then he passed on the Ruffin part of the name. And they never explained to us where that came from, but it would be really interesting to sort of try to follow that up. Unfortunately, when you're doing research, you get very frustrated because you find that many of those old records are lost. In those days, all the buildings were wooden, and so fires were very prevalent, and many records were often destroyed by fire. So it's pretty difficult to fill in those gaps once those records are gone.
This little song that I'm singing about, people, you know it's true. If you black and gotta work for a living now, this is what they will say to you. This is, if you was white, you'd be all right. If you was brown, stick around, but as you black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back. I was in a place one night, they were all having fun. They was all buying beer and wine, but they would not sell me none. They said, if you was white, you'd be all right. If you was brown, stick around, but as you black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back. I went to an employment office, I got a number and I got in line. They called everybody's number, but they never did call mine. They said if he was white, you'd be all right. If he was brown, you could stick around. But as you black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back. Me and a man working side by side, this is what it meant. They was paying him $1 an hour, and they was paying me 50 cents. He said, if you was white, you'd be all right. If you was brown, you'd stick around. But as you black, oh, brother, get back, get back, get back. I built the country, and I fought for it, too. Now I guess that you can see what a black man have to do. He says, if you's white, she's all right. If you's brown, you stick around. But as you black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back. I hope win sweet victory with my little plow and hoe. Now I want you to tell me, brother, what you're gonna do about the old Jim Crow. Now if you's white, she's all right. If you's brown, stick around. But if you black, brother, get back, get back, get back.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Well, Anderson, he was head of this hospital in Washington, and then he came back to Canada. He found the love of his life, Mary Ann Casey, whose family was from St. Catharines. And she, too, was what they called colored, very light-skinned black. They went off to Chatham in southwestern Ontario, and he became the first black coroner. As a coroner, this is the person who goes and examines those people who have died. This person is employed by the government or the town. So therefore, that he has a very regular job. It's a prominent position. He gets a paycheck of some sort. Whereas in those days, doctors really weren't well paid. So to just have a medical practice, they didn't make the kind of money our doctors make today. They were often paid in the form of a chicken or eggs, or maybe not at all. So that, fortunately, he'd inherited his father's money, so he had the opportunity to enjoy other ways of living. And from there, that also gave him the opportunity to indulge in other activities, and he was very often president of the Medical Association or the Literary Guild, the Music Guild. He was a part of the school trustee. He was very interested in education, and he was very committed to integrated education and integrated public schools. It's interesting that although he was educated in some of the private schools throughout his life, because that was the only way he was going to get an education, a black person often wasn't allowed in white schools. So he kept his children in public schools. And every time they were thwarted, he would fight for the right for them to be there. So that happened both in Chatham, and then later on when they were in high school, he insisted again that they be part of the integrated system. In Toronto, we didn't have that kind of a problem. In Toronto, schools were pretty much integrated. It was outside of Toronto that we had the problem of what we call segregation. And from there, he went on to Chicago, which was an interesting phase of his life because there was a much bigger black community for them to be a part of. And he again went back into work. After retiring, he went back to work and ended up heading what they called Provident Hospital and Training School for Nurses. And this was a wonderful opportunity for young black women who before that could only get jobs as housekeepers or servants or caretakers. They couldn't become anybody professional because there was no way for them to train because all of the schools were white. So this was a wonderful opportunity. They were able to become professional nurses. and kind of move up in life. From there, he came back to Toronto, and two of his children came back to Toronto with him, and the other stayed in the United States. In my story, the way that we lost touch with our relatives was that Anderson Ruffin Abbott's children, he had three daughters and two sons. And the three daughters ended up marrying African Americans, and the two sons ended up marrying white women. Eventually, the Canadian side pretty much lost touch with the American side, and the white children ended up with a relationship separate from those of the black children. So by the time I heard about the story, I had no idea that I had all these black relatives in the United States. Since then, I've been, and the reason I even found them was because I was looking for information about Anderson Ruffin Abbott, and I was looking for anybody who could tell me about him. So one person would lead me to another person, and that person would lead me on to someone else. And gradually, we were able to pull everybody back together again. So it was kind of a story of reunification, where the family who had been at one time separated, and again, this was separated by color, by race, we were able to pull the family back together again. So it's been so wonderful ever since. We've had many reunions now, and we're in very close contact with each other. And we now share the story and try to tell the story from different perspectives, each of us having the same history. We're trying to undo the damage that was done by the what we call the myth of race.
Black is the color of my true love's hair. His face so soft and wondrous fair.
People in this particular family were not very dark. Technically, their skin probably wasn't much darker than mine. And my black cousins very often aren't any darker than me, if even as dark as me, although I look perfectly white. But they have other features that identify them. But also in the United States, there are more of them, so they tend to congregate together. It's something that is identified, whereas in Canada, particularly in Toronto, we tend to generalize those kind of characteristics, and we don't tend to classify people as much by physical appearance or race. Not that there isn't racism present, but it's not quite the same situation. So I was very unfamiliar with even categorizing people with according to race. I didn't even know what you call people that look like that. I just wasn't familiar with it. These grandparents of mine, we had known about them. We just didn't know they were black. So we were only getting half the story. And we had pictures of them, but they were, you know, older with white hair, and they were old, you know, brown pictures or black and white pictures. So you just didn't, it didn't cross your mind. They looked pretty much like we looked. And my grandfather was the youngest of his siblings of five children, and my mother was the youngest of her siblings. So by the time, my mother was actually a whole generation younger than her first cousins. You can see, you know, just with distance and age differences, one tends to lose touch with those who you might normally have been in touch with. And in those days, you didn't have internet, or you didn't use the phone to the same extent, and although she would write to some of her cousins, she didn't necessarily know what they looked like. Yeah. I mean, if they had fair skin and black hair, it didn't seem to, you know, so they had black curly hair, you know. It just didn't seem to be the identifier for her. And her parents were very careful not to mention race. And the same with her, she had one white cousin, and his father, too, would never mention it. Her first cousin, Gus, his father was a doctor as well. This is one of Anderson's sons. And he passed as white, and he actually ran a white hospital in Chicago, which he would never have been able to do if he had been considered black. But he ran that hospital. He was a specialist, a lung and heart specialist, and he would do that during the week. And then on the weekends, he would go down to the south part of the city of Chicago and volunteer his services to the black community and visit his sister. So, of course, the black community knew that he was black. But it was a very common practice to just allow the white community to assume you were white like them, and then it didn't cause any ripples or any difficulties. It would certainly have been embarrassing to everybody, even if they had suspected. To bring it out would have been embarrassing, and they needed his expertise, so they allowed him, so to speak, get away with it. I haven't had any negative reactions, certainly within the family. It's been a delight to be able to come together and share this history and renounce that kind of racism. When I first started out, I was trying to find out more about just what it was like to be black. And I found it very awkward to try and meet people who had that experience and to break into black social groups or develop friendships with those who were black. I had to make quite an effort to forge on. It was okay after a while, but it took some time. That was one thing. Certainly when you're writing a book, you think, you know, you probably read books and think, oh, that person is such an expert on that topic. And really, I knew nothing. The book itself is about how I discovered different things and how I responded to the new discoveries, because I was certainly not coming from a place of expertise when I first began this research. For me, I just find it a very rewarding experience to be able to explain some of the experiences. I suppose the topic of interest to many people is this topic of passing. That is, for instance, in my grandfather and my great uncle's case, they passed as white. For me, I wanted to understand why they would do that, why they would forsake this glorious past and these wonderful ancestors and not ever, even into their death, never breathe a word of it to their children. It was just a real conundrum for me. You know, how could they not want their children to know the truth? But at the time, having now researched enough of it to know how prevalent it was, how important it was that they better the lives of their children, that in fact, as Anderson had begun many years before that, working towards integration, it just seemed natural now when I see these men working towards not necessarily denying their black heritage, but not claiming any racial identity, was a form of combating racism. ignoring the fact that some people thought there was a difference in races, they ignored that issue totally and took that to their death. And I think that that is a very significant way of living and thinking. They were determined to undo this myth of race.
Who will pay reparations on my soul? Written many directions for the aid that was given. They gave us pieces of silver and pieces of gold. Tell me who'll pay reparations on my soul. Many fine speeches. Summer was there and the freezing winter's cold. Now tell me who'll pay reparations on my soul. Call my brother a junkie, say he ain't got no job, no job, no job. Told my old man to leave me when times got hard, so
man.
Can't depend on no one else.
Oh yeah. And what about the red man who met you at the coast? You never did share. Always had to have the most. And what about Mississippi, the boundary of old? Tell me who'll pay reparations on my.
Tell me.
The end.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.